Harsha Walia is a member of the No One Is Illegal campaign here in Montreal, which has been organizing around immigration issues, and amongst them the war on immigrants here at home. Harsha is also a member of the Indigenous People's Solidarity Movement and Rebel Desis.
Hi. I just want to start off by thanking the organizers of tonight. It's a really great event, and there's been a whole festival of anarchy that's been pretty awesome, so thank you. On my way over here, someone asked me why I was speaking on a panel on anarchists against the war, because the war was over. I think we all know that that's pretty much bullshit. The war started 500 years ago and has been going on for 500 years. We are currently sitting on occupied territories. This panel is on Mohawk land, and that hasn't been over. With regards to the war in Iraq, certainly the overt bombings of Baghdad and Basra may be over, but in terms of the lives lost, the thousands of civilians that have been killed, and the hundreds of thousands of people who have been displaced by these so-called smart precision bombs, for them the war has just started. So for all of us, this is when the war starts, particularly for No One Is Illegal, and for those of us who work for open borders and who work for the freedom of movement for people, this is when the war starts. This is when it starts, and this is when we say, and we demand absolutely that those who have been displaced must have the freedom of movement wherever they are, whenever they want it. Otherwise, the war is not over. This is when our opposition to militarization, as well as globalization, capitalism, this is where we make the links, and this is where we tell everyone that this is where the war actually starts. With regards to the fight for open borders and free migration that No One Is Illegal puts forth and many other groups have put forth before we have, those ideas are obviously very intricately linked to anarchist ideas of anti-statism and anti-authoritarianism. And of course, as I said, we're not new in doing that. But the point of the panel is, how do we create these spaces? How do we counter, you know, the liberal, pretty wishy-washy movement of anti-war that's driven by peaceniks who think that the war is over now? The new theme in Montreal, I'm sure in many other cities, has been to blare the song, the Lenin song, Give Peace a Chance. We've heard that on the streets for months on end and no longer hear it, because apparently now the absence of overt militarization means that we're now at peace, but obviously we know that that's not true. So as I said again, more than ever now is when groups like No One Is Illegal and so many others make the links that the war at home is linked to the war abroad, and the wars at home have intensified. We are not at peace at home. Our communities are ever more under scrutiny, ever more racially profiled, ever more under attack. And the wars abroad, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the wars all over, have created the displacement, those forces of capitalist globalization, the WTO, the World Bank projects, all of those that we talk about, those have created the conditions of displacement that force us to talk about issues of migration in the first place. Over 150 million people move across borders every year, and that's UN statistics. So that's, you know, that's existed for a long time. Certainly these facts have existed before, but it's become a phenomenon more so than ever since 9/11, since the war on terrorism, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, where the enemies in these wars are vaguely brown, Muslim, Arab, male, don't really know who they are. So the racism here is obviously so glaringly obvious to most of us. An entire community of Arab, Muslims, South Asians, brown people are being held responsible for the acts of a few people. The collective punishment that we all have to face for the acts of a few people is one that we have never seen before. We did not see it when Timothy McVeigh bombed the center. We did not see it in any other time where white America was attacked. But we see it now when the perpetrators are not white, when they are brown. So again, the crimes of a few become a collective punishment for all of us. I'm sure everyone here has heard quite a bit about the special registrations, the racial profiling, and the mass detentions in the US. We hear a lot about it in Canada, and we're told that Canada's different. Somehow Canada is more tolerant. But I don't know how that is. for some reason, if we're so tolerant, why are we building a new detention center that's supposed to be similar to Baxter, which is the highest security detention center in the world? Why are we building that in Ontario? Why are we in Canada considering a mandatory detention policy similar to one in Australia, where detainees, where those who arrive on the shores of Australia are automatically detained for no reason, treated like criminals, put in detention centers where they have limited access to food, they can only see the sky, there are no fucking windows in the place, they're in solitary confinement, put under bright lights for up to 23 hours a day, are put in shackles? Why are we considering a mandatory policy like that? We're told that that's somehow different than the internment of Japanese in North America during World War II. I think it's the fucking same. We haven't learned anything, but apparently we think we did. Interestingly enough, though, we're told that all this is being done in the name of national security, that these are post-911 measures. But it's interesting to note that legislation such as the Safe Third Country Act has been in the works since 1985. People have been talking about Fortress North America, similar to Fortress Europe, since the early 90s. And this pretense of national security is bullshit because it's a much longer term strategy of creating borders, creating an apartheid system, one that seeks to control and manipulate a certain class of people. To those of you who are a little unaware of the detentions in the detention system and how it works in Canada, it's pretty much similar to the one in the States that we hear about, where you have people in solitary confinement, where you do have people who are, you know, picked up random on the street, where policing powers are increased, where police are increasingly having the power to interrogate everyone. There's a new system being implemented where those who are non-status have to have special cards made that they can be asked for their card at any time. It's called the permanent resident card. There's also increased powers that are being considered where those who are naturalized citizens may even have their citizenship revoked, and new detention hearings where people don't even have the right to appeal. There's no right to defense, and they're behind closed doors. So everything is being integrated. The judicial system, the criminal system, our immigration system, and that's something we have to really be fucking worried about. Again, it's important to understand that the very basis of this is to create an apartheid system. It has very little to do with national security. It has everything to do with creating the movement of capital while we restrict the movement of people. It has everything to do with creating a class of citizens that become exploitable because they are underpaid, undocumented, and become exploitable workers. And so, you know, being told that this only started for two, you know, this has only been since 9/11 and that it's a national security mechanism, that's bullshit as well. What was I going to say? Okay. Well, as I was saying, the mass displacement that capitalism creates, while at the same time, you know, we're talking about immigration measures here that seek to control the movement of people, there's also measures being taken back in the South. You know, a lot of people have called it the right to remain. Measures such as having temporary refugee camps, creating so-called safe havens, very similar to the ones that were created in Iraq for the Kurds. Those aren't safe havens. They're pretty much, you know, ghettoization of people similar to prisoner of war camps, and they provide temporary assistance. There's supposed to be safe zones. Then you have heavy duty surveillance offshore. You have major, major fines for airlines who carry passengers who don't have proper documentation. So all of this is a whole system that is not just relegated to the north. It carries over in the south where you have, you know, so-called refugee camps that are temporary. Palestinian refugee camps have been like that for 50 years. You know, always stateless. When is that going to change? So coming back to what do we do as radical anti-authoritarians in the anti-war movement, what do we do about it? I don't really know. I guess we just somewhat keep doing what we're doing. Resisting is creating in many ways. We have to keep creating those spaces for people. We have to keep asserting a political space that affirms the ideals of justice and dignity for all that we believe in. I think it's also kind of ironic when we are going to be talking about this liberal anti-war movement, that when many of us, you know, when I kind of hear George Bush, it's kind of ironic that a lot of what he says, I think, is a lot of what we believe in, that we believe in freedom and we believe in the right to fight for all. Obviously, what he believes in is different, but the ideals of standing for what you believe in and not necessarily being a pacifist is something that certainly we all believe in. But we're also told that we should compromise, that all of this is inevitable, globalization is inevitable, capitalism is inevitable, imperialist aggression is inevitable. But to that I say that if all this is inevitable, then so is resistance. Our resistance is inevitable, our fight back is inevitable, the voices that will not be shut down are inevitable, the people who fight back and continue to fight back will be inevitable. And certainly those who fight against being called illegals and who will fight back against their so-called invisibility and illegality, they will continue to do so, and that will remain inevitable. I'm just going to end with a little bit about Known as Illegal. We're not an anarchist collective, but I think a lot of us hold those ideals pretty close in terms of, as I mentioned, anti-statism and anti-authoritarianism. We've been working in solidarity with a lot of groups and campaigns. We're actually going to be speaking here tomorrow, so I don't want to talk about them very much, but the non-status Algerians, Palestinian refugees, indigenous sovereigntists from St. Peaks, Gracineros, Ganawage, etc. So since we're going to be speaking here tomorrow, I don't want to talk about that, but I just want to talk a bit about what our role is. What's our role as support roles, or what's our role as allies? I think it is also important to not... So when people use support roles or ally work, I kind of find it a misnomer. I think in many ways it delegates a tier of leading and following that I think we all do respect. Certainly those who are directly affected are the ones who are gonna lead the struggle, who are gonna decide the nature and direction of their resistance. But I think it's also important to realize that allies have a major role to play in helping other communities and helping those directly affected in providing support that goes sort of beyond, you know, logistical support. You create the means for which they are able to empower themselves. You create the spaces for political campaigns which they can use. You provide the tactics and the tools for empowerment and mobilization that they require. I don't know, something about being called allies and ally work I think is almost somewhat derogatory and almost romanticizes communities that you're seeking to support in many ways. Another thing I also want to mention, last of all, is that something about community work, which we've heard a lot, or I've heard a lot, especially Known as Legal, is that people talk about community work, but then when it comes down to it, they talk about it being, you know, oh, it's too nationalistic, it's too sexist, it's too racist, it's too heterosexist, it's too pretty much everything. And they get turned off by it, somehow assuming that our communities are different than any others. I really want people to keep that in mind because it's something that I've seen happen a lot. And I think that is bullshit. That is romanticizing communities. That is, you know, sort of seeing that you're going to go out there and do some sort of work and everyone's going to agree with you. So we really have to understand that if we're going to talk about solidarity and talk about support work, people probably are coming from the same place. They may not call it what you do, and there definitely is a process of learning that everyone has to respect. The last thing I want to say is that... a couple of last things. Is that now, more than ever, really, if we're going to talk about struggles for justice, the freedom to move and the freedom to stay have to be central to what everyone does, whether it's the anti-war movement, the anti-globalization movement, the anti-capitalist movement. It has to be central because those are the forces that dictate the world around us today. And I just want the quote that I'm going to end with is from a Mexican woman in California who's at a demonstration, and she said, "We didn't cross the border crossed us."